Hello and welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Greg.
And this week we have a Greg episode. So I believe we're going to be talking about the deep cut barracks, which I don't feel like I know too much about, but I think it'll be one of those cases where there'll be details and parts of it that come up that I'll be like, oh, maybe. But I'm super excited for this one. Greg says it is an awesome one. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, it's definitely a really compelling case. I also wasn't aware of this case's existence before this week and research, and I'm going to talk a little bit at the start of the episode about how I not stumbled upon this case, but was informed about this case and then started reading. And, you know, it's one of those ones where you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. How has this happened? Your brain's going a million miles an hour. So, yeah, wow. Really excited to talk through this one.
I don't think we've covered a case like this. Am I right? Or is this quite a unique one?
We haven't. And also, I was surprised to find that these cases aren't as unique as you'd expect them to be. So, yes, lots to talk through, lots to digest, lots to debate and discuss. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it. But before we do that, how is life treating you?
Yeah, good. I went home this weekend. I visited my family, which was lovely. We had a really good time. The sun was shining as well, so that always helps. It was, yeah, really good to see everyone. And then hopefully next weekend we might see each other. We're going to go watch some comedy together. So that should be good fun. We've got a few friends coming down to Cardiff.
Woo! Yes, we'll be living the Cardiff dream. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. God, I'm looking forward to everything. Looking forward to the comedy, looking forward to the case.
Thank you, so positive. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I am actually a little under the weather. I know you are too. So for all of our listeners that are wondering why we maybe sound a little different, it's because we've both managed to get coughs and sore throats that aren't COVID related.
Yeah, not COVID, but unfortunately, Greg, you've had it the worst, though. You had to cancel on a trip last week, which, yeah, super gutted for you.
I was meant to spend my weekend, in Amsterdam, which is in Holland, for people that aren't aware. And I was unable to make that trip because I woke up on the day of my flight feeling awful, lots of coughing, and you can't really get a flight anymore if you've got an awful cough, right?
You don't want to risk it. No, it wouldn't be good. Yeah. Such a shame, though. I've never been to Amsterdam, but it sounds amazing.
Nor me. And it's been a long time coming, and I still just haven't been able to make it over there yet, which is heartbreaking.
So close. But yeah. Aww.
Already lining up the second try. So hopefully this summer I will make it over there. That's the plan.
Yes. Second time lucky. That's how they say, isn't it?
I think so, especially in reference to Amsterdam. So yeah, fingers crossed I make it at some point this year. But yeah, what a waste of flights, money. Ah.
Oh, don't think about it, don't.
Goddamn COVID and this new world we live in. But yes.
I know.
Other than that, I am well. I'm trying to think if there's anything interesting that I've done since we last spoke. And honestly, it's just mostly work these days, but I don't mind that. I'm still enjoying it. I have been drinking every so often, but not in a too bad a way. Let's see how this weekend goes.
We haven't seen each other for a little bit, I think. Before Christmas? No.
Yeah, I definitely don't think we've drank since I gave up, so must have been a while.
Have we seen each other face to face this year?
Yeah. No, maybe, yeah.
No.
Have we not?
I don't know if we have.
Yeah, maybe we haven't, actually. Have we?
I don't know. I think... Oh.
Would I?
It was just before Christmas, I think.
Yeah, it was before Christmas. I don't think we have. Poor form. Poor form from us. Oh, well.
Oh, my gosh. Time flies. Yeah, we'll have to do some celebrating and partying this weekend.
Exactly.
Looking forward to it.
We'll make up for lost time. But for now, shall we jump into the deep cut Daph's case?
Yes, let's.
Cool. So yeah, like I said at the beginning, I'm obviously biased, but today's case is particularly compelling. We're going to be talking about the deaths at the Deep Cut Army Barracks in the UK between 1995 and 2002. Four junior soldiers lost their lives in collectively obscure circumstances. This case has for sure opened my eyes to what can take place during army training and barracks in the UK. So buckle in.
Oh, okay.
Before we jump into the deep cut case, let me explain a bit more about how I came across this case. I was planning on talking about the killing of Vanessa Guillen in Fort Hood, Texas. You heard of that one?
Oh my gosh, yes. That one just was unbelievable. It was one of those cases, you know when you find those cases where it's kind of unraveling and you found out about it quite soon on and then you kind of follow like day by day what's going on and what new evidence is being uncovered, and that was one of those cases for me that it just really stuck with me. It's awful, awful.
Yeah, that's a really shocking case, and that was a case that I was aware of, sounds like similar to you, was on my radar, and you hear about all these crazy details, so I thought, okay, I'm going to do that case this week. For people that don't know, Vanessa Guillen was barbarically bludgeoned to death by a junior soldier, Aaron David Robinson, at Fort Hood in Texas, USA. And the killer eventually killed himself when Vanessa's dismembered remains were found a couple of months later. So, awful yeah. case, really startling.
Awful, yeah. And the girlfriend of the guy that killed Vanessa, didn't she? She had a lot to do with the cover-up and she was sort of involved. But I don't know whether you're going to move on to this, but like when they ended up finding her remains on the riverbank, they ended up finding a few other remains that they weren't sure whether they were related to the barracks that maybe have been missing soldiers from before, which was quite unusual.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of conspiracy stuff around that case, and understandably so. There's a lot of funky things at Fort Hood.
Yeah.
But we should probably do that case separately. But it was the research for that case that led me to Deep Cut. Because when I was researching Fort Hood, I was looking into statistics and figures for deaths on US Army bases. Because I learned that 39 people died at Fort Hood in 2020 alone. Which seemed a lot, considering there's 40,000 considering there's 40,000 soldiers stationed at Fort Hood, 39 people dying in a single year seems awfully high.
It does seem high, yeah.
And that led me to learn that of the 18,000 US active service military deaths since 2006, only 25% of those deaths have been a direct result of overseas combat, such as fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan. So 75% of active service military deaths in the US are caused by a range of factors, most prominently illness, accidents, and suicides.
Yeah.
All when they're meant to be, kind of in training or just on home turf, basically.
That is surprising. I know the suicide rates within the military are extremely high, and during training and stuff. But to have 75% seems crazy high. I'm surprised about that.
Yeah, me too. And then that got me thinking about how similar it could be to the UK. And while the numbers here are only a fraction of what the USA sees, it's similar themes. A lot of UK soldiers in active service are being killed with the same causes: suicide, illness, and accidents. I shared this stat with my family, and my brother suggested I check out the Deep Cut barrack deaths. And like I said, I hadn't really heard of them before. But when I started reading about this case, I knew I had to do it for today's episode.
Wow, I'm intrigued to know more about Deep Cut.
We'll get there, I promise.
No, you're all good.
So, as is always the case when I go down one of these rabbit holes, I went to see if there was a documentary, and fortunately there was a whole panorama investigation. So a lot of the details for this episode and this case will be based on that. And for the record, Panorama is like a UK, BBC, investigative
crime. Yeah, kind of pretty direct, straight to the point. They only like give you the facts. There's no like fluffiness in between. It's straight to it.
Exactly. So let's talk about Deep Cut. Despite Britain portraying its military as one of the most professional in the world, the Deep Cut barracks told a different story. There were tales of sexual harassment, bullying, and violence embedded in the base, but recruits were petrified of speaking out. While some former soldiers described Deep Cut as a place of fear, for the parents of four unfortunate soldiers, Deep Cut was the place their children lost their lives. The Deep Cut barracks in Surrey is home to the Royal Logistics Corps of the British Army, and there are 400 young soldiers stationed there. In the early morning of June 9th, 1995, shots were heard. Private Sean Benton, only 20 years old, had 5 bullet wounds in his chest after going on an unauthorised lone patrol of the barracks perimeter.
Oh my gosh. He's so young as well.
Very young. Suicide notes were found at the scene addressing Sean's parents. The notes claimed he'd let them down as he'd failed as a soldier. His peers at the barracks were given very little information about what had happened to their friend and colleague. A former soldier stationed at Deep Cut described how he was simply told, "Private Benton shot himself in the early hours of this morning," and that was it. No mention of how he'd done it or why.
Okay.
According to the army, it seemed a clear-cut suicide. Benton was going to be discharged as he hadn't made the grade. However, his parents suspected there was more to it than a suicide.
Then, did you say that he was shot 5 times in the chest?
5 times in the chest, yeah.
Would that be possible for suicide?
Well, we'll definitely come to that. Because that was one of the first things I thought. That seems very unusual.
A lot.
Now, he was using an automatic weapon.
Okay. So that
could explain it a bit more. But there are some more details on that, and we'll 100% go back to it.
Yeah.
Despite never going into the details with his parents, Sean had told them that he hated it at Deep Cut. Frequently, he'd be down, and he'd always talk negatively about life in the barracks. Details of sergeants and corporals at the barracks being excessively harsh on the inexperienced recruits began to come out. One former private, Trevor Hunter, described how there were physical marks on the young soldiers who were so terrified about describing what happened.
Oh my gosh, that's not okay.
Yeah, definitely not okay. And physical intimidation is a theme throughout this. Friends of Sean described how Sean's cheeky attitude meant he was often singled out for attention from the unpleasant senior officers. Army Sergeant Andrew Gallahan was singled out as the NCO who made Sean's life difficult. One of Sean's friends said it was like the sergeant had an issue with Sean. One horrific event that Sean recounted to friends was him being awoken by a group of people with respiratory gear on. You know those, like, creepy masks with...
Proper, yeah. That sounds like something from a horror movie. That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, it is. It is. Those masks, I'll try and get a picture to share on the Instagram. The ones with the... I guess where your cheeks are and also where your mouth is. They've got those, like, breathing pipes, I guess you could call them that.
Yeah.
Just looks terrifying.
Oh, no. And he was woken in the middle of the night.
Woken in the middle of the night by a group of people wearing just those, well, not just those masks, a group of people wearing those masks. And they beat him up when he had no chance of fighting back.
Oh my gosh, that'd be terrifying.
Mm.
Terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. And in an equally awful second event, Sean was thrown out of a second story window.
What?
Hmm. That was done by an unnamed NCO, and Sean reported it to a Lance Corporal, who claimed they were forced to ignore it. that Lance Corporal said they were told this was just a standard part of the army initiation.
What? You just get thrown out of a window? That's not... That's awful.
Yeah, I know.
It's not standard practice.
I'd love to hear from people that actually went through army training and these initiations, because that to me does not sound normal.
So extreme.
Yeah, throwing someone out a window doesn't sound right to me.
No, not at all.
Instances like these should have been recorded in a reporting logbook, but this was never done. It wasn't just Sean who was on the receiving end of this brutality either. One former private stationed at Deep Cut describes how he was innocently writing a letter to his parents. Suddenly, the private was thrown over the table and received multiple punches to their face. They kept asking, why?
What?
Why are you doing this? But they received no answer before the NCO stopped, began whistling a tune, and left the room as if nothing had happened.
Oh my gosh. What?
Mm.
It's like almost... It's psychological as well. It's not just the physical, like, painful and shocking ordeal. It's like, then to, like, whistle as if nothing happened. Like, that messes with you.
Yeah, you could never feel safe.
Yeah, there's, like, no reason for it. So you never know when it's next going to happen, if it does. Like, it just sounds like a nightmare there, a living nightmare.
I really think it was a living nightmare for a lot of these young recruits. The documentary didn't specifically say this inexplicable beating came from Sergeant Andrew Gavahan, but they alluded to it. The sergeant would tell others they shouldn't upset him, as his twin brother would come out. I.e. he was insinuating that the violence and the volatility was not him, but an imaginary counterpart.
Like a Jekyll and Hyde situation.
Yeah, it's almost like he's blaming it on a second personality. It's like, do you really want these people running a military... barracks?
No, not at all.
No.
Definitely a lot of intimidation there.
A lot. It was, possibly unsurprisingly, Gavahan, the sergeant, who spent most of the night with Sean Benton on the night he died.
Interesting.
Sean had been told that day that he was going to be discharged from the army. He'd failed a 3-month warning period after twice failing to qualify as a driver. In a later inquiry into Sean's death, Sergeant Gavahan claimed that he decided to spend that night with Sean on guard duty because he didn't want him going to the bar and getting drunk after receiving the bad news.
I don't feel like that's his responsibility, though.
No.
He's an adult. Do you know?
Yeah. And let's look at the facts here. You've got a sergeant who seems by his own admission to be unhinged, since he blames these attacks.
Yes.
On his imaginary twin brother. And this sergeant in particular is, at the least, a bully to Sean.
Yeah.
You've got all of Sean's peers saying that this sergeant in particular had it out for Sean.
Yeah.
And Sean's been attacked at least once in his sleep.
And it definitely doesn't seem like it would be coming from a kind-natured place of his, you know... He wants to make sure that Sean's okay. Like, I don't think it's coming from that place. So,
yeah,
a lot of alarm bells.
It does make you wonder why the key man in all of that has made sure he'd spend the final night with Sean before he supposedly killed himself. With 5 gunshots to the chest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, the gun used was an automatic gun, and the shots were fired in 2 bursts. So the bullet wounds were effectively spread out around his body. But, like, around his chest.
Right. In 2 bursts.
Yeah, it's like one of those burst rifles where...
Yeah, but it just seems odd that there's 2 bursts, at least. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah,
like, I understand that there's multiple gunshots due to the automatic weapon, but it's the 2 pulls of the trigger, which makes it seem strange.
Certainly seems strange. Also, I feel like the chest is a weird place to decide to shoot yourself.
That's also... Well, if it's an automatic weapon as well, I don't know what kind of weapon it is, but if it's a large one, like, surely... I wonder if they assess, like, the angle of the wounds and things, because it seems like it'd be quite complicated as well to be able to do that.
It is a pretty large gun, and a lot of people have commented on that, about how difficult it would be to shoot yourself with. Like, it's possible, but it would be a challenge because the trigger is obviously would then be at arm's length, and very strange.
At least arm's length, and then to be able, you know, to do two bursts as well, five gunshot wounds. It doesn't seem easy.
Certainly not. According to the sergeant's story in the inquest, Sean was sent to bed by the sergeant at 11:30 p.m. However, Sean returned to the guard post at 4 a.m. and told the soldier there that the sergeant wanted to see her. It was then, supposedly at this point, that he took that soldier's gun and used it to kill himself. Sean had tried to commit suicide even before he joined the army, so it is possible that there was no foul play. However, even if that's the case, it's hard not to think that Sean was pushed to that point. And also, how have the British military let someone with a history of depression be stationed at a barracks with a violent bully?
Yeah.
A ballistics expert did explain the injuries and five bullets as conducive with a suicide, which was surprising to me. But they did say it's possible.
Yeah.
And I guess you do hear stories about people that commit suicide and manage to pull the trigger twice.
Yeah.
It just seems strange.
It's not impossible. So at four in the morning, Sean's gone over to the guard post and he's taken the weapon off someone and then used that weapon. There would be CCTV of that, right? Of not necessarily of him doing that, but taking the weapon off the person, and this person wouldn't let his weapon off like that. That's what, you know, one of the rules is that weapon is like meant to be like a part of you, like another limb. You can't let go of that weapon. So to take that weapon off this person, does he run off with it? Doesn't someone follow him? Do you know what I mean? I feel like it's not. And then to do it in the way it is, it just seems complicated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think the story is a little simpler. Apparently, he just went to the guard post. I don't believe there's CCTV there because it's like an outdoors area, and said, "Hey, the sergeant wants to see you. I need to cover your guard duty."
Here's the gun. Just a switch.
Yeah, it wasn't like he grabbed it from them or anything.
That makes a bit more sense. Yeah, sorry, I forgot you said that he said that he needed to leave. They were switching. But yeah.
Yeah, so that's supposedly...
It
definitely seems strange. It seems weird to me that
it feels like strange.
A break in rules, like that you can just go and say, "Hey, I need this gun. I'm taking over from you. You need to go and see that person." Because you think they'd sign these things in and out.
Right, yeah. Strange.
The next victim of Deep Cut was Private Cheryl James. She died from a single bullet wound to the head after being on guard duty at the camp. She was alone and armed, which is apparently a breach of regulations at the camp. Which, again, made me wonder, like, how was Sean able to get the rifle himself and then supposedly kill himself if these people aren't meant to be alone with a gun? Because there'd have been another person there.
Unless it's like a rank situation where once you reach a certain rank, you can be armed and be alone with a weapon, but...
They were the same rank.
Right, okay.
Mm.
So the person on the the guard post, they were alone with a weapon, right?
That's according to the story, yeah, that he just went and told this single person on their own with a weapon, "Oh, the sergeant wants to see you, I'll cover you." So why were they on their own? But the documentary didn't draw a lot of attention to that. I was just like, they said it for the second death, and I was like, well, if that was the rule, then how did Sean manage to get the gun
in the first place?
Yeah.
Unless that person on guard duty was a high rank, but then they wouldn't drop their weapon for Sean. They wouldn't leave. Like, that seems... There just seems to be, like, an inconsistency there.
Definitely, yeah. A lot of inconsistencies to the army stories I seem to find. Cheryl's gun was found next to her. Despite this seeming more like a suicide than Sean's, the coroner recorded Cheryl's death as an open verdict, because apparently there were inconsistencies in the events leading up to Cheryl's death. She was described as happy and joking before her death. The army, however, decided that the inquest was complete and that Cheryl had, without doubt, committed suicide, basically choosing to overrule the coroner's verdict.
That seems strange as well, yeah.
Hmm.
Okay.
No one spoke to Cheryl's parents to understand more about Cheryl's mental well-being and frame of mind when she died. The army did, however, send her parents a letter saying there was no evidence to suggest Cheryl had been mistreated.
Seems strange.
It does feel like a ass covering, doesn't it? If you're not going to talk to the parents, but you're going to be like, oh, but by the way, just in case you think we mistreated her, we didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. Like, why did they feel the need to say that? It does seem odd. And even just talking to her parents, I thought that would be like a protocol thing where they'd, you know, check out the family history, all the like events leading up to this.
Hmm.
It seems weird that was left out.
Well, it seemed to be a theme of the investigation because there really was no stringency to it. There was no ballistics done, there was no forensic examination, and there was no post-mortem. Yet, the Panorama investigation discovered that some NCOs at Deep Cut sexually harassed the female soldiers stationed at the base. One corporal was aware that Cheryl was marked out frequently for sexual harassment.
Oh no.
Poor Cheryl would often find herself crying in the block as a consequence.
Oh, that's so awful.
Yeah, it's really tragic. There is an unnamed sergeant that is accused of making serious advancements to Cheryl that she refused before her death. Yeah, in one unconfirmed report, and this was, I guess, a rumour that was spread around the barracks, this particular sergeant told Cheryl that she had to come and see him late in the evening. And when she got there, the sergeant basically made a move on Cheryl, which she declined because she has a boyfriend. And that refusal wasn't taken very well. And the army's investigation didn't pull back any of this. And actually their response was to go to the parents and say there's no indication that we've wronged Cheryl at all. But actually the Panorama investigation quite easily found a wealth of information that showed that young female recruits stationed at Deep Cut were often found on the receiving end of some very, very unpleasant sexual harassment, including Cheryl.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, the fact that they're able to find all this information, it sounds like it was quite easy to find as well. And yet their first response was, to tell the parents that no, there was nothing that went on against Cheryl, when it obviously did. So, yeah, you are right. It does sound a little bit like they're covering up some stuff here.
Yeah, and again, this is a young, supposedly healthy, happy woman that has ended up shot at this barracks only months after Sean maybe was killed or killed himself. But this is a
mysterious death.
Yeah, two mysterious and controversial deaths only months apart.
And it seems as though, as well, Cheryl's found numerous occasions crying after enduring what sounds awful. So there'd be multiple witnesses to say that there was definitely something going on there. But they just went, no, she's happy and she's fine and there's nothing going on here. It really doesn't sit right.
So with Cheryl James, not only were there all these awful indications that she was sexually harassed, potentially even worse, by some of the senior officers at Deep Cut, when they finally did an inquest into her death, they found out quite a lot of alarming extra evidence that maybe points to some more sinister reasons for why Cheryl lost her life. So even though that there were prolonged and repeated requests for all of the information from the base about Cheryl's death. Even by 2015, the force itself admitted that it had still only handed over about 75% of the material it holds in relation to Cheryl Chambers' death.
75%?
Yeah.
But if it's suicide and they're very much wanting to let the family know that there was no wrongdoing there, why wouldn't you send it all? It just makes you look seriously bad.
Makes them look like they're hiding
something. Yeah, they look guilty.
Yeah, it really does point to them hiding something. Yeah. They even said that they had been making legal submissions to the coroner to delay the inquest into her death indefinitely.
That's not okay. And you know, even if it was suicide, they're still protecting themselves. There is a woman here that has died. Just give her the respect that she deserves and, you know, provide the family with answers. But it feels as though that even if they didn't have anything to do with the death, they did some horrendous stuff to her, and they're still protecting themselves over that. It's, you know, they should hold their hands up and show it, share it all, I think. Just for, it's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. It's awful. Even like in the run-up to the hearing, some of these like other details were coming out. So apparently there were yellow fragments of the bullet recovered from Cheryl's body.
Okay.
That did not match the red army issue ammunition.
Oh.
So basically the bullet didn't match. And that indicated that there was no evidence that connected the weapon that was found next to Cheryl to the weapon that was used to kill her.
Oh my gosh. Well, that seems pretty big. They're pretty careful with ammunition and, you know, you sign it in, sign it out, weapons in and out, and who gets what. So I think that's pretty compelling.
Yeah, very compelling. Mm. But then also weirdly, all the ammunition from the weapon that was found next to her was just destroyed, inexplicably destroyed.
Why? That doesn't make any sense. Well, it does make it, well, it just again, it makes them look really suspicious.
Yeah, it's like, if this was a suicide, why would you be making yourselves purposely obtuse?
Yeah. This just seems so fishy. It doesn't sit right. But
yeah. Also, the bullet fragment where this came from also just vanished.
What? Oh.
It's like all this evidence is just going supposedly missing.
Mysteriously vanishing. And conveniently for the barracks.
Yeah, extremely conveniently.
Mm.
It's really, really unsettling to think that this can happen on a military army base in the UK.
Yeah. And so frustrating for those families. They're just,
yeah.
They're just desperate for answers, and they're not getting them. Super frustrating, because this is definitely going to be a case that's going to go round and round, round and round for me. With no closure.
And it's frustrating as well, because it took these cases going to an inquest before these details came out, but then the inquests, interestingly, all still turned the suicide verdict, so it does make you wonder.
It's also, Cheryl, she died in 1995, and they said, what, 2015, they were still trying to get some evidence.
Yeah.
20 years on, it just seems, it shouldn't be that difficult.
No, it shouldn't be. Clearly no lessons were learned after Sean's death. No clear actions were taken to prevent future tragedies. And staggeringly, in the 4 months between Sean and Cheryl's deaths, 5 other soldiers attempted to take their own lives at Deep Cut. Some of them even tried multiple times.
Oh my gosh. That seems so high. That's awful.
There are 400 soldiers stationed here.
Yeah,
it's in 4 months. 5 of them, more than 1%, have tried to kill themselves. And 2 have either successfully killed themselves or been killed.
just so shocking. Why wasn't this flagged up more? Like, why wasn't this investigated? Like, there was...
The bullying and sexual harassment continued at Deepcut after the deaths in 1995. In March 2002, James Collinson lost his life at Deepcut. He'd been on guard duty with two other privates before taking a gun to his own head. He was later found with a single bullet wound to his head. His parents are doubtful that their son did take his own life. And they discovered that another family had lost a child at Deepcut only months before. Jeff Gray, only 17, died from two gunshot wounds to the head whilst on guard duty. The army said the death in September 2001 was also a suicide. So again, this is like another one. Multiple gunshot wounds and supposedly a suicide.
Yeah. Yeah, and only months apart again. It's just... I feel like even, you know, if there was multiple suicides, or even during 1995 when there was multiple attempts during a short period, like when that happens, I feel like there should be a protocol where everything kind of gets shut down and we need to investigate why this is happening. There must be, there's obviously something going wrong here where, you know, this is all happening. So it should be investigated to kind of help prevent stuff like this happening. And yet it doesn't seem like the care seems to be in covering it all up and kind of just, it's all suicide. It's, and it's not our fault either. It just seems so wrong. And then for 2001, 2002, for it to, you know, to start happening again, it's so sad.
Yeah, it really is sad. Awful. And I'd love to know what happened to that Sergeant Governor that clearly was some kind of mad bully. I'd like to think he was fired or arrested, but I doubt either of those things happened.
Yeah. You should not be in a position of power like that.
No chance.
No way.
For both James Collinson and Jeff Gray, they had always dreamed of being in the army. Both sets of parents were struggling to identify any reason that their children might kill themselves at the base. Jeff Gray's girlfriend had spoken to him just hours before he had died. She said that Jeff was his normal happy self and that he's just passed his driving test and that he promised to call her the next day. For Jeff, the coroner returned an open verdict. Again, there was no ballistics examination, and after the inquiry, evidence was destroyed. And by the way, the lack of ballistics examination meant they couldn't be sure which gun was used to kill Jeff.
What? Surely... Again, that seems strange as well, like... I feel like if there's multiple weapons, multiple guns there, that it may, you know, it should just be protocol that you just double check those things because there are weapons there.
Yeah, especially when someone else, or, you know, three other soldiers basically have been killed.
Well, maybe it's someone higher up or someone that's able to kind of like influence or kind of like steer the investigation certain ways to prevent stuff uncovering.
It does feel like a cover-up, doesn't it?
So was Jeff the one that Jeff was the one that didn't have the ballistics? Well, I suppose neither of them did, but Jeff had the two bullet wounds.
Yes, that's correct.
Again, it seems it, I know it's not impossible, it does seem strange.
What are the chances that there are two suicides at this base with multiple gunshot wounds?
Yeah. And straight away it's like, oh no, it's suicide. We won't investigate it further. Evidence destroyed. So even if you want to go back on your word and maybe if you have some doubts that there might have been some foul play, the evidence was destroyed anyway, so you won't be able to do that. If it was genuinely suicide and there wasn't any question of it, though, why do you need to destroy things so quickly? And I don't know, it does seem doesn't sit right.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like they're just trying to quickly sweep it away and not have to deal with it. But then interestingly, independent investigators have again confirmed that for both Jeff and James, the evidence points to self-inflicted injuries. But the reasons for them taking their lives remain unclear. So it makes you wonder whether or not the responsibility lies with the NCOs and the senior officers at Deep Cut Barracks. But that's the Deep Cut Barracks case, and it really is a lot of
I've got so many questions. Like, I'm definitely going to try and find that Panorama documentary as well. It just seems like there's so many open questions. I don't think it's... They don't feel like they are an open and shut case. Like, there's some definitely some dodgy stuff going on there.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot to be read out there because there's a lot of shocking facts about this case. And there have been, you know, further inquests into the deaths. But it really is... it really is surprising. And actually, all of the further inquests turned up additional evidence.
Well, thank you so much for doing this case. It's definitely one that I haven't heard of, but it's going to be left with me for a very long time, I think. I'm going to be definitely watching that Panorama.
That's the one.
The Panorama episode for sure. This, it just doesn't quite add up. All of them don't quite add up. It just seems strange. But yeah, thanks for sharing this one though, Greg.
Yeah, no worries. It's a hell of a rabbit hole that you guys can get stuck down. So I implore you to go and read some of the details from the inquests because they really are shocking.
I definitely will be.
Do you want to share the socials in case anyone has a hot take on what they think happened at Deep Cut?
Yeah, sure. So you can send in your own personal true crime or paranormal stories to our website at www.goreandguiltypodcast.com. You can also share your case suggestions or anything at all on there as well. You can email us at goreandguiltypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Gore and Guilty Podcast or our Twitter at Gore and Guilty. And if you like this episode, feel free to leave a review, give us some stars. And yeah, we hope you enjoyed this episode and thank you for listening. Remember, we won't judge if...
Gore is your guilty pleasure.
Thanks.
Thanks, bye. Guys.